As W.H. Auden once suggested, sometimes all the instruments agree. There's a period in American music that runs roughly from the invention of radio to when it was superseded by television, let's say from the First World War to the mid-1950s. For the first time, music could be recorded and transmitted to millions. The invention of the microphone meant that voices speaking and singing in more conversational tones could be heard. Words could be understood. The U.S. surged with arrivals from all over the world, bringing a cacophony of languages, ambition, and exuberance, all of them determined to be American. It's been called the Great Period of American popular song. Berlin, Gershwin, Ellington, Cole Porter, Harold Arlen, and a few score of others whose names are sometimes overlooked until you hear their signature tune.
Time after time, I tell myself that I'm so lucky to be loving you.
That's Time After Time, a random favorite, one of mine, the late Julie Stein. Wilfred Sheed, the loquacious novelist and critic, has written a quirky appreciation of this period of music, which many critics believe is the most imperishable. His new book is called The House That George Built, George's and Gershwin. Now, unfortunately, Wilfred Sheed is too sick to join us, but some of his friends have been pleased to make themselves available, so we're pleased to be joined by Eric Comstock, the distinguished pianist, singer, and writer. He joins us from the studios of WXEL in Boynton Beach, Florida. Thanks so much for being with us, Eric.
It's my great pleasure, Scott. Thank you.
This period that we're talking about, what do you think are some of the elements that came together?
Well, as you said, it was certainly the onslaught of radio, and I just think of it as a very literate time.
Also, there was a need for a lot of material, wasn't there, between new movies, a lot of which were musicals, and for that matter, hundreds of Broadway theaters and revues across the country?
There were hundreds of Broadway openings every season. And so, yes, you had a maw to feed, as well as at all those studios competing to put out the best musical talent.
I want to begin talking, as Wilfred Sheed does in this book, perhaps it's the best place to begin in any circumstances, Irving Berlin, born Israel Berlin, arbitrarily a favorite Berlin tune, always.
I'll be loving you. With a love that's true, always.
It's actually one of the songs with which he courted his wife, Ellen, his second wife, actually. He was a bachelor about town in Manhattan and a widower. And he was a last-minute extra man at, I think, one of the Mrs. Vanderbilts of that time, one of her dinner parties. And he wound up sitting next to this very well-brought-up Irish-American lass called Ellen Mackey. She barged right in with her first conversational gambit. Oh, Mr. Berlin, I'm just mad about your new song, What Shall I Do? And Berlin fixed her with an owlish look and said, the title of the song is What'll I Do, and I accept your correction. And they were off and running for 65 years of marriage.
Yeah. Wilfred Sheed, of course, is a critic and a writer by trade, but he definitely thinks that it's actually the tune that makes an enduring song.
The hummable tune is the thing first, and great lyrics follow. But I think it's a miracle, again, the erudition of the lyrics to these songs when, because of the great tunes that are attached to them, maybe the writers didn't have to be so brilliant. But Larry Hart, Cole Porter, Johnny Mercer, Dorothy Fields, all these folks really outdid themselves in writing sensational poetry.
Let's settle into George Gershwin now. How old was George Gershwin when he died?
He was 38.
The way you wear your hat, the way you sip your tea, the memory of all that, oh no, they can't take that away from me. The way your smile just beams, the way you sing off key, the way you haunt my dreams. No, no, they can't take that away from me.
What did he bring to the American popular song?
I think there is something about the Gershwin songs in particular, and I am a piano player and singer by trade, and I get plenty of Gershwin requests, and I have to say, I don't tire of songs like They Can't Take That Away and Love Is Here to Stay.
Wilfred Sheed says that people conjecture what George Gershwin would have done if he had lived in quite the same way they do about John Kennedy.
Yes, we often speculate what new worlds would he have conquered, and would Porgy and Bess have become a success in his lifetime. Obviously one of the great American masterworks, and he always had ears open for the next thing and the modern thing, and absorbing all that and doing wonders.
Let's talk about Duke Ellington. Wilfred Sheed suggests in this book that his name on music was often what amounted to a corporate name that was also kind of a stand-in for Billy Strayhorn and a lot of other talents.
Oh, yes. And his own band. I happen to think that the Ellington songs are great all-around songs. You can't beat Don't Get Around Much Anymore or Do Nothing Till You Hear From Me. And the more Ellington you hear, the more you need to hear.
Let me ask about, again, it's just arbitrary, my favorite, Sophisticated Lady. Wilfred Sheed points out that depending on how it's sung, Sophisticated Ladies can either be a kind of enigmatic song about city folks at night, or it can be a cautionary tale about what happens if, you know, when nice girls run away from home.
The lyric is by Mitchell Parrish, and I think Ellington's explanation for it was that the sophisticated lady in the song reminded him of some of his school teachers back home in Washington who would go to the continent every summer.
Smoking, drinking, never thinking of tomorrow. Nonchalant, diamond shining, dancing, dining with some man in a restaurant. Is that all you really want? No, sophisticated lady, I know.
I don't know how he found that bridge. I think it starts in A flat, and when you have a song in A flat, you may transpose up to D flat or down to E flat. These are all very related to the key of A flat. He goes to G. He somehow finds a way to get a half step lower than A flat and then brilliantly come back for the last eight bars of the song. It boggles.
I'm going to ask you about Cole Porter now, and let's just hear a little bit of Anything Goes.
In olden days, a glimpse of stocking was looked on as something shocking. Now heaven knows, anything goes.
All the other songwriters we're talking about are either Jewish from an immigrant background or certainly, in Duke Ellington's case, African-American. Cole Porter was from Piru, Indiana.
And Episcopalian yet.
Closeted gay. How did he both fit in a sense, elevate what he became a part of?
I think he was a typical dilettante writer of his class and had very little ambition, but it was his wife, whom he adored, just was a modern sort of marriage. But it was she who felt, if you're going to do this, I want you to apply yourself and be a professional. And, of course, it was the greatest favor to humanity that she kept him going. He spent his life pretending not to be working very hard. And for a man who was born rich and married richer, he worked harder than just about anybody.
His lyrics just capture so much attention because of their cleverness, the internal rhyme and reference. Are his melodies sometimes underrated?
I think they'd have to be because, as you say, the lyrics get such deserved kudos.
The world has gone mad today, and good's bad today, and black's white today, and day's night today, when most guys today that woman prize today are just silly gigolos.
He had such an open mind about musical forms, and his harmonies are extremely hip for his time.
Bulford Sheed makes the point in this book that a lot of the great songwriters we're talking about were prone to depression.
Yes, and the more successful they got, the worse they felt.
It's funny, Bulford Sheed quotes Gene Stafford as saying, happy people don't need to have fun. The expression of the songs was the way that some of the people we're talking about dealt with their emotions.
Oh, I'm sure that's true. And I think Berlin was the one who said, I feel like a merchant who no one wants anything in my store. And as the decades came and went, this kind of very craftsman-like material went way out of fashion.
I wanted to end with talking about one of my personal favorites, Frank Lesser.
A brilliant man. And one of those few, like Julie Stein, who had an incredibly fortunate second life back in New York. They both took great risk by leaving Hollywood and its trappings and its very steady salary and great weather, and came to New York to become writers for the theater. I think that Lesser is one of the most... There's another man who died fairly young. He wasn't quite 60. And as with Gershwin and Kurt Weill and some other writers who died comparatively young, Larry Hart, the sky looked to be the limit because of the modernness with which he wrote and the variety of between Most Happy Fella and Guys and Dolls and How to Succeed. It's staggering.
Luck be a lady tonight. Luck be a lady tonight. Luck if you've ever been a lady to begin with. Luck be a lady tonight. Luck let a gentleman see how nice a dame you can be. I know the way you've treated other guys you've been with. Luck be a lady with me.
I wonder, you obviously have devoted a great part of your career to performing a lot of the music that we're talking about. What connects with people over the years about so much of this material?
I think most people are romantics, and these are songs that one can fall in love to or fall out of love to. And the craft is such that it's so emotionally rewarding to have a song to sing. And these guys were professionals who were churning stuff out for profit. You might think of them as snobbish because they wrote in such a what now looks to be an elevated sort of style, but I think they were actually the ultimate populists. They had a high opinion of the public, and their attitude was if the public loved it, they must be right.
Eric, so nice to talk to you.
Thank you very much, Scott. It's a joy.
Eric Comstock speaking with us from Boynton Beach, Florida. On behalf of his friend Wilford Sheed, whose new book is The House That George Built, with a little help from Irving, Cole, and a crew of about 50.
Just kiss me once, then kiss me twice, then kiss me once again. It's been a long, long time.
That's Eric Comstock performing Julie Stein's It's Been a Long, Long Time. And you can read more about the great years of the American popular song in an excerpt from Wilford Sheed's book at npr.org/books. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.
You'll never know how many dreams I've dreamed about you, or just how empty they all seemed without you. So kiss me once, then kiss me twice, then kiss me once.